We were talking to ourselves there for a second. Oh, it's 5 seconds between friends. Oh, welcome to We the People Radio. It's not as chaotic as it seems, but we have been doing a little time traveling today.
Yeah, we have.
Somehow we left for the studio at quarter till, and we got here at quarter till. My clock was 4 minutes off. It's like, how does that work?
Yeah, I don't remember driving here either.
And then magically the music was playing, so it's been kind of fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there we are.
There we are.
My name's Bill Cundiff.
My name's Aaron Ryan.
There you go.
Sounds funny when we do it like that.
I know, we reversed it.
Yeah. And if you would, well, okay, this is probably a bad time to bring it up, but if you'd like to sponsor the show, the information's on the webpage at wethepeopleradio.us.
Always looking for sponsors.
Always looking for sponsors.
Highly
appreciate
it.
And you know what? Could be individual people. We have a lot of nice individual people who sponsor the show and have for a long time. And businesses who can sponsor publicly or privately, you know, depending on what's what.
Yeah, we got a great advertising package for you if you want to advertise with us.
Absolutely. And... Sue's sending us smoke signals from the other room. It looked like it said Bruce. It did. It said Bruce.
Oh, then Bruce, I thought it says he's in the hold can.
Then I thought, it says Bruo. Is that an acronym?
Could you respell the whiteboard, please?
Secret radio. Well, that's what happens when the whiteboard is like the size of a postage stamp. Not sure really what we're... The other ones were too heavy or big. We have a window that's like 6 foot by 6 foot and a whiteboard we're flashing to each other that's like literally 5 inches by 6 inches. It's almost like you're here, isn't it?
Yep.
In a super scary way. Good Lord.
So what are we doing today?
Okay, first off,
you can
find everything about the program at wethepeopleradio.us. And actually, all screwing around aside, that is going to be really important for today because there's quite a bit of information I think you'll want to reference. You can always forward that to people and post it on Facebook, whatever your deal is. And before we get too far down the drain, it's the 26th of May, 2019, the first time we're airing this. So it is not Memorial Day for real, since that's on Thursday. I think it's Thursday. I can't decide this year if it's Wednesday or Thursday. It's the 30th anyway. But it is Memorial Day weekend, which is not about hot dogs. You know, contrary to popular belief. I actually have a nice graphic on the site that I put up there that said, remember the difference. Veterans Day honors the living who once served in the armed forces. So that's in November. Memorial Day, that's this month, honors those who died in service to our nation. So it's really important. Those are different, and specifically so. So for all of those people who have made that ultimate sacrifice in defense of our country so that we can live in the land of the free, we appreciate you and honor you this weekend. And for all the family members, surviving family members, thank you for having the courage to have folks in your family who step up and provide that service to our country. And for all our veterans out there that we honor the rest of the year without specific delineation, God love you and God bless you. And we're working on the VA every day. We need to have some more programs about the VA. We have a whole section of programs on the VA on the website, actually. So today we have three different things. So we're talking about President Trump's immigration policy for the first half hour with Bruce Moran. Second half hour is about the Israeli elections and some current events with the Israel's consul general out of San Francisco. So Shlomi Kaufman will be with us for a half hour. And then we're going to do part 10 on South Africa because they've had some elections as well. So the Rainbow Coalition is now gone and they're going to go full blast trying to get rid of all the people that they don't like. That'll be ugly and interesting all at the same time. So Bruce, according to the tiny whiteboard, is with us.
Bruce, are you there?
I believe I am. God bless all the veterans and all, like you were saying, the members of their family who served and who are since gone. Aaron's brother also.
Yeah.
He served.
So, my brother, my stepdad, my dad was in the Army Reserve. Yep. I guess I should tighten that up. I don't know what he did exactly.
My dad was in the 101st Airborne. Yep.
See?
Yeah.
Got it covered.
Yeah, we got it all.
My uncle's Guadalcanal with Panton.
Oh, no kidding. Okay, you beat all of us. That's pretty awesome. And we have Bruce on frequently, but he is with Security Solutions Technologies. It's a veteran-owned company, provides federal government consulting and contracting in a variety of things, cybersecurity, IT stuff. They do financial things, logistics. And we speak to them regularly, folks from Security Solutions Technology, about, whether it's been a lot on the border lately, actually. Lately, a lot of our shows have been with the border. And I have all those listed with the descriptions of the shows. So if you would like some backstory, please feel free to do that. FISA warrants, all those good things. So we've got two documents from Bruce that I hope you will go reference. And one is a fact sheet on the president's immigration plan. And the second one is really a good visual. It's a kind of a four-page graphic of, what's happening with the immigration proposal. So, all right, that's the end of my information, Bruce. Go ahead.
The White House did a good job. This was sent to us from the White House, as you know. So we are seeing exactly what's going to be conveyed to the American public. This particular part of the border security program and the immigration program was put out 2 weeks ago. So we're following up with it, and subsequent to that time, other information has come out. But we're looking at securing the border, as President Trump had promised he's going to do. And this part is also about making sure not only borders are secure, but the ports of entry are more fluid. They're allowing more people through, and they're also going to have faster entry. So more people will be stationed down there. Just last week, they sent down 750 TSA people to help support the mayhem and the chaos that's going on at the border. We don't have enough support as there is now. As this new border security immigration program highlights, the border security will be relieved, and they'll be able to help the local people in the towns, and that's part of this program too. People in the towns and the law enforcement, border security will be able to help them even more because it's an overflow. And it runs across the border into towns, and the cartels are facilitating this, and that's what this is about. He wants to have 100% inspection on the borders and making sure everybody comes through the ports of entry. We're looking to also, what's really unique about this is a merit-based system, and when the president got in office, he changed our economic policy around, and he started with the tax cuts and various sundry things that help get our economy rolling, and it's really rolling. And this part of the immigration program is helping people who are coming in as immigrants to get jobs. So it's called a merit-based system. And other merit-based systems are in Canada, European Union, Australia. So it's not unique to us, it's just that we're instituting a program that's going to be more fair in having people secure their American dream. So you can get different kinds of visas, and it'll help you get a better chance to get started in the country.
Sure. And for all the griping, I'm going to kind of, I'll stick to the outline because I didn't write it, and I don't obviously work in this type of policy, but the goals for this system are pretty simple, fully secure the border. And I just don't think they're things people would disagree with if they were going to be honest about it. It would be fully secure the border, protect American wages, attract and retain the best and brightest talent, prioritize immediate families, so as opposed to the cousin of the cousin of the brother-in-law, strengthen our workforce, and preserve our humanitarian values. So get rid of, I'm assuming that relates to the coyotes and, all the rest of that stuff.
Sure, absolutely.
What a...
We're talking about the prioritizing of immediate families. Now they're doing DNA testing, so they can't say this child is not theirs or is theirs. They'll know exactly if they're using the child to come across the border three or four times with the coyotes, or with the cartels. So... That's a wonderful program. You'll be able to keep the families intact, too. And then they'll be able to be processed faster. So that's what they're looking at. When they're talking about prioritizing immediate families, we have that concern about the humanitarian crisis, but she immediately addresses. So you don't want the criminal activity to be involved, so that kind of differentiates between the criminal activity, the DNA testing I'm talking about.
Sure.
And the, you know, people who are legitimately coming across here for asylum. Now, what we do know is that true asylum seekers are only about 10 to 12%. So there's a lot of processing that needs to be done and a lot of people that won't be able to come across the border.
Hey, Bruce,
those who are able to and then want to come through the ports of entry legally, it's going to be sooner, quicker, faster. And that's what this is all about.
There we go. Okay. We were trying to negotiate our first break here because I was making Sue read my mind.
Sure.
But I knew we had to take it. So we'll be right back with our guest, Bruce Moran. We will swiftly chat more immigration. You can find all the information we're discussing at wethepeopleradio.us.
When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Your body, then they go. What shall we do about them?
Sonic Man out of you. Don't stop me now.
I'm having such a good time. I'm having a ball.
Don't stop me now.
If you wanna have a good time, just give me a call.
Don't stop me now.
I'm having a good time.
Don't stop me
now.
Yes,
I'm having a good time. I don't wanna stop.
Yeah, once we get this border thing going, definitely don't stop it. Good grief. Okay, so Bruce...
you know, there's 100,000 in the last 2 months. You know, that's crazy, crazy for our border security. Now we got the TSA down there, and they still can't handle it. They're coming in everywhere.
Well, so, yeah, when you think of that number, 100,000 per month...
Crazy.
That's phenomenal.
That's what we can tell.
Yeah, that's what we know about.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I'm not laughing. I'm just saying we don't know.
It's the depressing laugh. Yeah.
Yes.
No, we know that one.
It's crazy.
So securing the border, that's the beginning, and that's the part that that always is the rub, because like back in Reagan's day, you know, he bought the. You know, he bought the plan. Okay, we're going to do the amnesty and all this stuff and policy changes, and then we'll secure the border right after that. And now it's 2019.
That didn't work out so well.
And that didn't happen. So,
and now we're going slowly but surely.
So,
and surely went on vacation when she's trying to secure the border.
Exactly. Don't go make sure.
And Bruce, you've supplied one of the things we have on our site is a chart.
Yeah. Chuck's been a stalwart. So is Lyle. Rebecca, it's Chuck Floyd I'm speaking of. We're partners in our security firm, and we work on a whole host of things. Border security being one of our major movers, and we find this particular program that the president is introducing here with the visas and everything of that nature to, you know, be proper and fitting to help us establish a sound and practical and germane border immigration system that with the borders that are protected and open at the same time, so you can have faster processing and making sure everybody's coming through legally. And that sounds like something strange, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's obviously craziness. So
yeah,
I know we've talked a lot about the actual border, you know, building of the wall, why it's important and all that. And if we're still having to explain that, honestly, it just kind of frustrates me that how is that even still a problem? But go to the merit based part of this, because I think that's the part that is easy to mislead people about and easy to misrepresent. But I know on your fact sheet it says around 70% of the immigrants who come to the United States today are admitted based on family relationships through the visa lottery. 70%. So it's not like we're saying, okay, these people have great qualities and talents and skills that we need in our country. They just know somebody, really. And it could be a somewhat tangential relationship. So the most vulnerable Americans are the ones that are hurt by the current system, which undercuts wages and drains the social safety net. And that's the part I don't think we emphasize enough.
I agree with that.
Or that people don't believe, I guess.
Two, three different ways, because people don't know how much money that costs us in terms of people coming across and they're collecting shelter space they're collecting for food stamps, and that's taken away from the kids in inner city. Our social security system, money's going to the seniors that can help the veterans. We talk about Memorial Day.
Yeah.
I mean, it can help a lot of people.
All these things. And so when
it's
they...
It's amazing.
But when they create the Build America Visa, which is what they're calling it, it selects immigrants based on a point system, and the high-skill categories you have listed here are extraordinary talent, professional and specialized vocations, and exceptional academic track records.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are completely not being considered now. That's
partially, but it's that what's being considered.
But that's not the main criteria
of the issue that's not being addressed. And,
right,
and that's demeaning to the people, like you were saying earlier, who really want to come across and be part of our country, fulfill the American dream, and carry on as American citizens. So, how I look at it, this has long been coming, and as long as we're able to institute a program of this nature, it'll be fair, it'll be just, and it'll be equal.
Sure.
It doesn't matter who you are, you come across on the merit system, and you'll be able to get in.
Well, and
that's a wonderful thing.
It's also prioritizing immediate family. So for the people that are saying, well, this is going to hurt people that are here, no. The proposal prioritizes the immediate family, ensuring that mothers and fathers and children will be at the front of the line to obtain green cards. And adopting the president's proposal ensures prosperity and higher wages for all Americans, especially recent immigrants. So creates a fair system that levels the playing field for all the potential immigrants and allows for greater diversity, protects workers from exploitation, fraud, unlawful displacement, and promotes our common language, English, and strengthens our national unity. So,
I also think there's a civics test that's going to be required.
Right. I remember seeing that.
I think that's wonderful. I think people need to know about our country, how it's formed, and what they're coming into. They're coming into something really great. President Trump says make America great again, and that's really true. And they might be changing the theme for the next election. Maybe it's Make America Great Again Phase 2 or something like that. But,
right.
What we're looking at is...
The Phase 2 is not communism, just to be clear.
Pardon?
just to be clear, Phase 2, if we're doing Make America Great 2.0,
yeah.
it doesn't involve communism, just so we make sure we differentiate between the other team.
Yeah, that's true, too. There's a slight difference there, why there was World War 1, 2, and... the Vietnam War was fighting communism, too. I mean, if you look at that, was a major move over there.
So before we run out of time, because I know this is a kind of a short segment to cover a lot of stuff,
sure.
I know Bill was really focused on the global race for talent. The statistics there were really, really interesting. Now he's not talking.
No.
Yeah, it's like a reverse reciprocal relationship. We're doing opposite of what other countries are doing in terms of how we're looking at the merit-based system. So if Bill wants to cover some of that, I'll follow along.
Oh, we lost Bill.
Lead or however you like to do that.
Yeah, we lost Bill there for a second. Okay, this part of the thing I thought was interesting because it's always good to see graphics and it's always good to see numbers on all these things because...
I like the employment and skill.
This is...
Synergy. That's like outrageous.
Yeah, the employment and skill numbers were crazy. So,
right.
So United States is right now pulling in 12%. Australia's pulling in 68%, so obviously they're fairly smart about it. New Zealand, 57%. Canada, 63%. Japan, 52%. Tell me this. Because I actually didn't go look this up. Do all of those guys use a merit-based system? Is that why they're on this list?
That's right.
Okay.
And also European Union has one, and they have what's called a blue card. So that's for their skilled workers.
And?
It's the European Union, so what does that constitute? 28 countries? So.
Sure. Yeah, because when you look at us, 66% is family, 12% is employment and skill, and 21% is considered humanitarian, diversity, lottery, and others. So obviously we're prioritizing family connections, which is nice. I mean, that sounds good and everything.
Well, the new plan what he's proposing brings us right in line with what the other countries are doing. So I guess I don't understand.
Yeah, why?
Where's the rub? We're gonna come to 33% on the employment and skills from 12%, which is 57%, which is right in line.
I think Bill is absolutely right on this because we people aren't fulfilling all the jobs we have now.
Right.
So that's I think Bill saying it. I mean, if we have people coming in and if they have the ability to fill the jobs, it's great. You know?
And there is a need right now for skilled labor.
That's a big need. The president has a record, a historical record. I don't know if it goes 40, 50 years, that the way the economy's just taken off.
Well,
I mean, you're talking about the H-2B visas, those are the working permits for service workers. There's a big demand there, and that's 70% of our population, 113 million people.
Well, we have a real need in our medical professions, doctors specifically, and you know one of the biggest problems is wait time at with VA is wait time at the VA. Well, a lot of the wait time is created by lack of physicians. However, I remind people all the time that it's kind of hard to get appointments with doctors outside, in the private sector as well, because a lot of them are retiring, and we could use more skilled people, absolutely, in lots of different jobs
across the board.
So, in our last minute, what do you think?
I'd like to also say the STEM. That's kind of a specific area that we need people.
Science, technology, engineering,
science,
and math.
Science, technology, engineering, everything across the board. But we also make sure that it's a national security concern too, because we don't want people coming in that will abuse the system in that way. So that's the rub, So that's why we have a proper and fitting vetting process that people go through to make sure they're coming through in a legal way. And I think that's wonderful. I mean, it's a wonderful thing. We are scientists that came in, helped us with the Manhattan Project. They weren't all American.
Oh, that's true.
That's a pretty good example for us to think about.
All right. Well, thanks
and
for.
I'd like to.
Thanks for that.
Lyle Rapacki for helping us on the border security situations. He does it live. I help report with him, and Chuck, of course, and Lyle has a little piece.
Yep. We will, how about this? We will highlight that just a little bit later because we've got to jump out here to this break. But thank you so much for being on with us, Bruce. Have a great Memorial Day weekend, and thank you for your service. And we will chat with you on a different Sunday.
Thanks for coming on, Bruce.
To take a stand. Remember who we are.
Remember who we are.
There's a call. Across this land, remember who we are.
Remember who we are.
We were a city on a hill.
Clearly now the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright.
Nice. Good call. I hung Sue out again on the music. Full disclosure. it's bad when I don't have my headphones on, then I don't know the commercial's ending. That's not good. Not helpful.
I know sign language, though.
Oh, we don't? He's not on. He is on. He's not on. Oh, okay.
No, you're on.
we're really spoiled. Most of the time, we have one guest on for the whole time, which is obviously what we are used to.
Normally, we don't have to coordinate.
No,
what you're saying?
The musical chairs, that's a new thing for us. Hey, so I'll add in what we cut Bruce off with at the last thing. There is a short book that our friend Lyle Rapacki with Sentinel Intelligence Services has written. It's called Our Forefathers Truly Appealed to Heaven. And you can find that on Amazon. You can find it. It's a, what is it? You know, the little books you read on the computer thing? Nook books, or what's a thing called? No, there is. It's called a Nook or something, but then there's another one. It's called something different. It's a little tablet-y thing. Anyway, here's an excerpt from the book. On this very remarkable day before 10,000 of his fellow citizens with John Adams standing by his side, George Washington took the oath of office as the first president of the United States of America. Among the first words spoken by our nation's first president were these memorable words, and I quote, "The proprietous smiles of heaven can never be expected on a nation that disregards the eternal rules of order and right, which heaven itself hath ordained." So, all those rumors about George Washington being an atheist obviously are false. But you can find that information and the link to Dr. Rapacki's book at WeThePeopleRadio.us. And our guest, Shalomi Kaufman, is with us. Oh, no,
hello.
He isn't. That was a funny sound. He's got a very mechanical voice. He sounds just like a telephone being disconnected. Hey, so I'll tell you about him. Shalomi.
Go ahead, one more time. Try it. I dare you.
Okay, so, and I just saw him here like a couple of months ago. He is the Consul General to the Pacific Northwest. So his office is in San Francisco. Poor guy, he's got to be there all the time. But, and they have some sweet security in there. I'll tell you what, it was hard to find him once we got there. We had to go through layers and layers of security. It was very interesting.
Did they have a wall?
Kinda.
Yeah.
They had their version of the wall, absolutely. And Israel is really good at, obviously, exceptionally good with security, whether they're in our country or their own. They do a very, very good job. You never felt weird about it, but, you know, you just look around and everybody was really paying attention. Yeah. We could learn a lot from the Israelis.
You were where you were supposed to be at all times.
Actually.
Pretty much.
Yeah, there's no roaming around, you know, none of that. He began his appointment as Israel's consul general in August of 2017, and most recently served as policy advisor to the deputy foreign minister based in Jerusalem, Israel. So he has had a 20-year diplomatic career, and... I'm not supposed to laugh. You know, it's terrible. When I heard Tim Conway died a couple weeks ago, a little aside here, when Tim Conway died, I don't know. I don't know if it was just the gods or it was because everyone was looking up Tim Conway on YouTube, but I've been watching all these old, you know, humor skits. And I'm like, God, remember when humor was funny? And it's like,
Yeah,
the little dial tone.
He's on.
I'm like, where's Harvey Korman? We need him. We got our own version of the sketch. No, here he is. No, he's not. Okay. I heard that, Sue. Oh, dear. Okay, so his past domestic and foreign ministry positions included the Director of North American Economic Affairs, Policy Advisor to the Deputy Foreign Minister, Diplomatic Advisor, and Director of the International Department of the Parliament and Ministry of National Infrastructure.
Okay, swear he's on the line.
Say that all
right
at
now.
One time.
He's on the line.
Is he really online?
Yes. Go ahead, try it.
Shalomi, are you with us?
Yes. Hey. I actually heard the introduction. Thank you for that.
Oh, we heard a dial tone a couple times.
Yeah, three times. We thought you were out.
Thank God for the printed bio.
Yeah,
we had something to tell people while we were having some phone fun. Now Sue can take her medication and go about her day in there. Oh, my God. Okay, so... the most interesting thing I learned when I was down there a couple months ago is that you guys have 43 political parties.
We had.
Now what are you doing?
We had in the first round 43 political parties that wanted to run. Eventually, we ended up with a little bit over 10. I think we ended up with 12 or no, actually around 10. So
still,
that's a lot.
Yeah. And it's a vibrant democracy and a very diverse one.
See, I don't think anybody really, I mean, we don't spend a lot of time learning about how other people elect their folks, you know, but I thought 43 political parties, it kind of sounds like our Democratic candidates this year. I think we're only up to 25 now, but, you know, 43 still in the running.
So, yeah, 43 lists, as we call them.
That's amazing. So, and then you don't just... Well, give people a little bit about that, because it isn't like you just go to the polls, you elect somebody, and then that's the end of it. It's kind of just the beginning.
Well, it's a little bit different than the U.S. system. It's what is called a parliamentary system, and where you need to have to form basically a coalition or a group of parties that will have a majority in a parliament of 120 members. And we have only one. One chamber. We don't have like Senate and the House, but we have only one parliament. And then what happens is that people they have to have enough signatures. You say all the 43 need to have enough signatures to pass a first threshold, so they can run in the elections. And then people go and vote for at least for a party. They don't vote for an individual, but they vote for a party, a group that represents or may represent their views on different issues. And then basically those who are passing the threshold and getting into the parliament, they have at least several seats in the parliament, then the process of forming the government starts. And then this is what we see today. And they have about 45 days to form a government, which is supposed to happen this week.
And how long do they stay in office?
Well, usually the government stays, the term is 4 years, unless there is a non-confidence vote in the parliament that may take the government, and for that you need basically the government to lose either on the budget or non-confidence, and this is under the government may fall if it has less than 60 votes.
Hmm. Okay.
And then the coalition, once it's created, then they decide who is the prime minister?
Well, the prime minister... Okay, so the way it works is that the head of the president, who is... who is not an executive figure, but he is the head of the state, he appoints the head of the party that has the largest or the highest chances to form a coalition. He appoints him and he asks him to form a government. And then, this is after having consultations with the head of each party that has been elected to the Knesset, to the parliament. And then he gives the mandate to the prime minister, to the person who represents the highest or the biggest party or has the highest chances, and expects him to come back after 45 days with the result. If that doesn't happen, then they may call for a new round of elections or appoint someone else or ask someone else to form a government.
Okay. So Israel...
talk about different.
Well, yeah, I apologize for my ignorance on your former government, but do you have, like, separate states within Israel, or is it all one state?
Oh, I asked that too.
So Israel, for those who haven't been to Israel, is about 8,500 square foot size. Okay. You can cross the whole country from west to east in about an hour and a half.
Right.
About 6-7 hours northwest.
And it's like one... What percentage of California is it?
It's 1/19th of California.
That's what I thought. 1/19th.
And this is why there are no states and there are no division of geographical division. It's like only one electoral area that votes.
Right. And so a form of government like ours really isn't even possible in Israel. That's why you're a parliamentary system.
Exactly. You have not only that. I mean, you have two major parties. And then the race or the post for the president is separate from the chambers,
right?
From the parliament. In Israel, it's like we don't vote for. Of course, there is a head of the party, and everybody knows, and he's heading, and he's the the leader of that party, but the vote is for a party. It's somehow similar to the British system.
Right.
Somehow, yeah.
See, I don't think people really fully appreciate when they say, oh, you know, Israel's having their election. Everybody's thinking, oh, okay, well, you know, you're going to elect just like we do. I mean, we always think it's just the nature of the beast. You always think that it's the same as the system you're in. When we come back, we'd like to hear a little bit about, now that that's done, what's happening in Israel. So we'll be back in 2 minutes. We've got to take a quick break. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Okay. And we're back with our guest, Shlomi Kaufman, who is the Consul General of Israel in the San Francisco office. So I don't know, we hijacked you from some family event, I'm sure, here on a Sunday afternoon. So sorry about that, but thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, so now that you guys have gotten through the actual election part, what are the hot things that people should know that we probably aren't hearing about, you know, over here? What should people be watching for?
Well, I think Israel is very much still engaged in the end of the election. I mean, how the election thing will end up. But I think what people should watch is one thing is maybe talk a bit about the connection between Israel and California, and having and things are moving on. We have actually a new Israeli Airlines is starting to fly 3 times a week from Tel Aviv to all the way to San Francisco, and together with United there will be like 10 weekly flights, a direct flight from Israel to San Francisco and back. So
wow.
this is good news. Plus, we had the economic side. We're moving ahead. We're trying to get more companies to this area to cooperate in the tech and the other way. We have about 300 Israeli companies present here, and we have many of the California companies residing in Israel. And they have. You have R&D offices, which is great, and of course having the direct flights that helps both the California economy and helps the Israeli economy. At the same time, Israel is the economy is flourishing and moving on. The challenges around us continue. We see we saw a couple of weeks ago a round of bombardment from Gaza towards the Israeli cities over the weekend. And plus, watching all the time what the Iranians are doing around us, whether directly or in Lebanon and in Syria. And the situation is always... there's always something going on this front that we have to watch carefully and follow. Because the extreme forces in the region are not seeking for peaceful solutions.
Sure. What? Just curious. What is the population of Israel?
We are at 9 million people.
9 million.
Okay.
9 million. Yeah.
Okay.
So if you compare it to California, we're about less than 20% of California.
So weird.
Yeah.
So weird to think about. I mean, and that's why, because it's funny when Bill asked that, when I went and visited the consulate and you guys were giving us a briefing on what was happening with the elections, that was my first question was, you know, do people campaign all over the whole country? Do they have districts they represent? And then we talked about the size. It's like, oh my gosh, we have congressional districts in California that are larger
than the state of Israel.
Which is kind of weird to think about, but you have more people, right. Obviously, if you're not representing 9 million people.
Yes.
But,
Israel is of the size of New Jersey,
yeah.
If you could want to.
And, yeah. you are literally surrounded, you know, for the people who aren't maybe super tied in with geography and all that, but you are absolutely surrounded by, I mean, I don't like, it sounds kind of mean, but it's true, but people who hate your country.
Yeah, we are, yep. We have a hostile and terrorist organization that hijacked the Gaza Strip. We have a terrorist organization which pretty much controls Lebanon, and we have hostile forces in Syria. And if you move to the east, of course, you have Iran, which is trying to destabilize the region and to, you know, to push for its own agenda.
Wow.
Yeah, so Israel pretty much has its guard up all the time, 24/7.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And yet, after 71 years, we celebrated last month the 71st anniversary for the State of Israel. Still, when you look at the list of accomplishments, when you look at what we have achieved in 71 years, despite the war, despite the threats, that's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. If you have over 10 Nobel Prize laureates, if you have a GDP which is about $40,000 per capita, which is you talk about technological investment and being a leader in technology, in water, etc. This is incomparable to any country in the region and in many other places. If you just the water issue, you know, the fact that we're in the desert and we succeeded in the past 15 years basically to solve the problem, to answer on the challenges of water that we had of the supply by constructing desalination plants, by recycling 90% of our water, and just being very efficient.
Yeah, something we haven't figured out. We talk about it a lot, though, in California.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big topic. Doesn't we seem to solve everything by taking it away from somebody else, or the plan is to take it away from somebody else. You guys are like, hey, we'll just go get more.
Well, what we're doing is trying to be efficient and to find solutions as fast as we can.
Yeah, well, you don't have to say it, but I'll say it. That's also something we don't seem to do real well in California.
Well,
again, we talk about that.
Yeah. So, you know, being a country which is basically an island, although connected by land to our neighbors, but actually isolated from from any possibility of supply or from you know, bringing water or electricity or anything else from our neighbors, we all have to rely on ourselves. And that kind of builds the resilience and the efficiency and it pushes you forward, understanding that you have no other choice but to count on yourself and to, if you want to survive. And you need to be strong, and you have to have a strong economy, a strong military in order to, you know, to preserve the country.
Sure. And everyone is in the military. Everyone goes into the military?
Everyone serves in the military. Men serve about 3 years, women 2 years. But yeah, that's military is for us is the Israeli melting pot. This is where you have people coming, serving, meeting people from who came to Israel from different places, whether from Ethiopia or whether from Russia or whether from the United States, and they all serve together for the same goal,
mm-hmm.
which is to defend the state of Israel. And that shapes significantly our identity.
How long have they done that? Forever?
I'm sorry?
Has Israel always had that policy? Has that always been the...
Yeah, we always had the compulsory. We always had the compulsory service. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
And on the immigration side, how many people immigrate to Israel every year?
I think we're talking about I would say about 20,000 people. It depends on the year.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on the event. The war times, you know, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, for 10 years, there was a huge wave of immigration when Israel accepted basically over 1 million immigrants from Russia and from former Soviet Union republics. That probably counts to 18% of its population back in 1990. There are immigration, there's some immigration from the United States, or what we call Aliyah, there's from France, from Germany. Ethiopians were moving to Israel in the 90s and even before. But it also today depends on let's say if in a certain country there is a wave of anti-Semitism like it was in France a couple of years ago, then you saw a huge wave of French Jews moving to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And Israel law says that we have what is called the right of return, meaning every Jew can basically land in Israel, say he wants to become Israeli citizen, and he's granted citizenship on the spot.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And we're planning, we don't have it booked yet, but we're planning to have Dr. Charles Small on, who I met down at the consulate, about the whole topic of anti-Semitism and what that means, actually, for the world at large. It's a much bigger problem, I think, than people realize. It isn't something that just affects Israel or people who are Jewish. It's a harbinger.
It's first and foremost directed towards Jews or against Jews. And
right.
this is why it's called anti-Semitism. And anti-Semitism had different forms. And I would say it's among the oldest hatred, which is by race. And you can go back to, you know, to the beginning of the second century, and then see where Jews were massacred by the Crusaders, and later on by the Muslims, and then later on were expelled from Spain. So you have this hatred toward Jews moving from one century to another.
Sure.
Today we see in different places, in Europe, we see also in the United States in different places the rise of anti-Semitism. We saw the attack in Pauli. We saw the Pittsburgh.
Shlomi, we're sorry, but we've got to go. It's a stupid news break.
All right.
But thank you for coming on with us for a little bit, at least this morning, and we look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely, always and anytime.
Oh, okay, thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
You're listening to We the People. We will be back. Now we're going to shift to South Africa, so, you know, don't let your head explode. It's going to be a fun ride today. We'll be right back. Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. We're still having phone fun. We've switched it up yet again. Now we're moving to Skype so we can have Skype fun. Because the phone fun wasn't enough.
No, we're gonna step it up a notch and have even more fun.
We're gonna increase the complexity. We're gonna cause Sue to have a medical event here. she's going to be like, okay, yeah, it was fun when I engineered your show last week, but it's the bloom is off the rose, as they say.
Yeah, you people need to go away.
You people with your kooky music and your silliness and your phones and Skype and all your jazz. So, that being said, you can find everything about our show at wethepeopleradio.us, and I would encourage you to do that because there's a ton of stuff up today, honestly. We've got a great deal of information up there on immigration that we covered the first half of the first hour. We never have this many topics.
Mm-mm.
There's a lot of stuff
very
going
confusing.
On.
Yeah, a lot of juggling.
A lot of moving parts.
Yeah.
Which is probably why we don't do it like this. Because we don't like it, and we suck at it.
That's right.
Kind of, a little bit. So you've got immigration, the first half of the first hour. You've got a couple of really good PDF files on there that, you know, just click on them, and you can read them. And they're the president's proposals for immigration. They're excellent. And so there's a lot of, I don't know, you know how it goes. There's a lot of goofy stuff up on the news and all that. If you're one of those people that's like, just tell me what it really is, give me the facts and let me read it for myself, we can do that for you. So head to wethepeopleradio.us, scroll down just a teensy bit. You'll see a couple of PDF files. One is a visual that's got just some charts and graphs, not real super complicated. Actually, they're very, very basic. And then the other one is a two-page targeted list of actual policy, so you can see what is actually being proposed. And that we got directly from the White House via our friend Bruce Moran. We then went to Israel. Actually, we went to San Francisco to talk about Israel with the Consul General, Shlomi Kaufman, who's a super nice guy we've had on before, and got a little update on the Israeli elections, fun facts there. And so now we're going to move to South Africa with our friend Dr. Harry Booyens. So just in case you've never heard the show before, which, how could that happen? I mean, what else would you be doing on Sunday afternoon? This is part 10. Of our issue on the real South Africa in our series, actually. We just started numbering it because it started to get too confusing. So I started numbering the episodes, as it were. So we've got tons of history. He is from South Africa, has a 360-year bloodline back into the country of South Africa with his family. So it isn't like he just, you know, went there on a trip, thought it was a cool place, and thought he'd talk about it a lot. No.
Well, his ancestors went there on a trip.
they kind of go on a trip
yeah,
and stayed.
Yeah, they stayed.
And actually, one of his ancestors was a slave. So there just is a lot of information yeah. That we just get that's just completely fake about South Africa. So if you'd really like to know the truth about it, his book, Amabulu, I've got that on the website. It's terrific. He also maintains a blog. I've got the link to that on the site. He's a prolific writer and a really good storyteller. So we've got him on the, I don't know, phone or something. We've bridged the gap.
Yeah.
Okay. We train wrecked on Skype and we went back to the telephone. You know, God love the telephone. You know, after that, we're going to have
good old Ma Bell.
We're going to have him here in person. But we keep talking to people who live too far away. It's not like we can tell them to run on over. So I should tell you about Harry, though, in case you don't know anything about him, in case you think he's just a guy from South Africa. He's actually an internationally recognized, multiple award-winning PhD defense and aerospace physicist. Go figure that out. He's originally from South Africa, I told you that part, and he lives in Vancouver, Canada now. But because he was a scientist for basically his whole life, I guess once a scientist, always a scientist, he's really committed to fact. So you won't hear a whole bunch of opinion and, you know, what he thinks about it and his spin on things, you know.
Feelings.
Oof, the F word.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're not going to do the feelings, although there are a lot of feelings to be had when you talk about South Africa. He's going to give us the facts, and I've got an article that he wrote recently that is at the very bottom of the page. You can just scroll directly to the bottom. It says for discussion today, and it's, again, about the elections. So take it away, Harry. Where'd you like to go?
Welcome, Harry.
Well, hi, folks. Hi, Aaron. Hi, Bill. And by the amazing wonders of a scientific guy by the name of Bell, I believe we can talk today.
Yes, we're doing well.
You know, we're doing our best to give Sue a run for her money.
She's
probably already figuring out how she can schedule something other than Sunday afternoons.
We have tried three channels of bubblegum technology, and it wouldn't work.
Because we could hear you, but it wouldn't go through the radio, which isn't really all that helpful for the people listening.
Yeah. And I stared at a black screen wondering, you know, what's at the other side of this black hole. I was hoping to talk to you and the good folks who are listening today about really the western portion of South Africa. And I would introduce that with the fact that there's just been an election in the country. And then I'd like to move on to something I've said every time, which is a couple of drop-dead important facts for those who haven't listened before. And then move on to the subject of the Western Cape, which I think is now the only option remaining for civilized people in South Africa.
Okay.
So, yes, we've had an election down there. And as everyone realized Mandela's ANC party would win again, this time with a reduced majority. It dropped from somewhere in the 60% down to 57%. That was widely anticipated because, quite frankly, that party has messed up that country to such a degree and impoverished millions, and someone was going to take out their ire on them, and it happened. Mostly it's black people who got miffed. So not too many of them turned up at the polling stations. It's somewhere in the high 50s, I think. So that's the lowest ever, considering it was up near 80-something in 1994. So there was, in fact, a loud message to this crowd. The party that came second is the one that historically was the opposition in South Africa back through the decades. And they got a loud message as well. They fell from something in the 20% to just scratching 20. And that was basically for two reasons, and that is that many black people really didn't buy their story, and number two, a lot of the rural white people just basically chucked them down the toilet and said, we've had enough, you are nothing but ANC light. That's actually the term used, ANC light, as with light beer. And the farming community and the rural white community voted en masse for a group called Freedom Front Plus, whose banner was Strike Back. Basically, their message was, we don't like being tortured to death.
Imagine that.
That's kind of basic, I would say. This party, the DA, the Democratic Alliance, which the one that was the historical opposition, they try to all kinds of courtship things across the divide in South Africa to grow their numbers. And in the end, I think solid Republicans in the United States would call them a bunch of pink rhinos. If that makes any sense. Spelled R-I-N-O in American terminology.
Right.
Okay. So, and that's what you have. The guy that you have played many recordings of, Julius Malema, who's the one who's forever on a stage shouting, kill the whites. He upped his percentage to significant numbers. He's now in third position.
Oh, great.
And generally in fourth position, it's a sort of a toss-up between this Freedom Front guys, the rural whites, and the rural Zulu, who are traditionalist Zulu in Zululand. It's confined to that territory.
Okay. Hold that thought before we get too deep in, and we'll take a really quick break and then come back so we don't break up that thought, because it is kind of confusing for people who don't know the history. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Okay, so Harry, back to the story.
Yes, ma'am.
Without further delay.
Yeah. So I mentioned the result of the national election. The truth is that while the numbers are kind of squirreling about and so forth, the national election is not, it doesn't produce anything insightful. There is nothing really to get your teeth into in terms of analysis, except that all the parties kind of lost votes and the fringe guys got more intense, which really is just one message. The country is becoming more divided than ever before, and it's hardly surprising when people are being murdered. So, you know, I'm on paper saying this is the stuff that South Africans can talk excitedly about as though it makes any real difference. and the media guys kind of discuss it with very earnest faces as though they're debating Whitehall in England. But it's not Whitehall. That ANC party has turned South Africa into just another asshole, as your president would say. And Parliament is now merely a place where some non-black folks are allowed to sit and listen to what next horror is to be perpetrated on them without being able to do anything about it. So to fight an election as a so-called colored or white or Indian person in South Africa is basically a stupid fool's errand. It's more akin to squabbling about seats on the Titanic. What's the point?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's best summed up by the previous president, who was the boss of the ANC and the president of the country. How can you possibly have democracy for the colored Indian or white folks when the state president calls them cockroaches that are to be removed?
Yeah, you can't.
You know,
yeah, that's hard
country,
to explain.
Some people get a little bit intense because President Trump suggested that some other countries may be sending their rapists across the border. In the case of South Africa, the president stands on a stage and calls 20% of the population cockroaches to be removed. That would have played real well on CNN if it were President Trump.
Yeah.
So that's what we've got. I think the correct way to look at that election is that the expropriator-in-chief, Cyril Ramaphosa, has just been given a five-year term as national president to do exactly what he pleases. That's subject to the wishes of a guy called Ace Magashule, who is the secretary general of that party. And what happened at the end of 2017 was that in order to get the support of the powers that be in the party to be made president, Ramaphosa, the new president, had to go and commit to that group that he would steal the property of white people. It's that blunt, it's that simple, it's that straightforward. Okay? There's never anything subtle about South Africa. Don't read subtlety into it. When they say they're going to steal your property, they mean they actually intend to steal your property. They don't understand there's anything wrong with that statement. Okay. So, without that commitment that Ramaphosa made, he was not going to be anointed to be the replacement for the previous guy, who quite frankly was a polygamist, animist, village idiot, Zuma. And the result is that the country now has a president that is a competent man with a politically evil intent, rather than what used to be a loud-mouthed, incompetent little village chief. And if Cyril Ramaphosa doesn't do as agreed, he might well end up dead, because Magashule has quite a reputation, and I mean might end up dead. There's nothing subtle about South Africa. When I say he might end up dead, I mean he might end up dead. So we have a situation now, meanwhile, that Julius Malema, whom you've heard make his kill the white statement a couple of times, he's now threatened the Indians in the country. And, you know, they're running around. Many of the black folks in South Africa are running around calling the colored people Malau, which is a very derogatory term down
and,
there.
And just a little note there, the colored people in South Africa are not black. These are the people who you're colored if you are not black.
Yeah. And that is the cue for me to tell you about the Western Cape, its history, and why I'm focusing on that at the moment. Whenever people in South Africa get hold of me and ask me what to do, I tell them, move. You either emigrate or you move west. Alternatively, you can wait to die.
Yeah, it sounds pretty much like you have no choice at this point. If you have no representation and you have such a maniacal leader that is openly...
said that his plan is to kill you.
To kill you.
Yeah. It's okay if other people do it. Just go ahead.
Yeah, it sounds like you better pack your bags and move.
Yeah, and so today I would like to focus on why am I telling people to move west? Okay? Because, quite frankly, let's be blunt here. Again, like I said, there's nothing subtle ever about South Africa. First of all, there's about 5 million white folks in the country. There's about 3.5 million colored folks. Now, colored in South Africa means people of mixed descent. And I will explain that mixed descent in a while. And that distinction between white and colored is, in my opinion, grossly stupid, unfair, and ill-conceived. And I will get to that. You can't basically kill that many people without gas chambers. That many people can't immigrate into another country. I don't think the United States is going to accept, you know, 9 million immigrants from South Africa.
No. Yeah, that's kind of an overload there.
If you can't kill them en masse, and you can't physically kick them out en masse. Remember, the Indians were kicked out of East Africa, and Britain accepted them, and Canada accepted them. I have several East African Indian friends. They were booted out by Idi Amin and people like that, and by all these other people that, you know, some in the U.S. now hold heroes. So they know exactly what I'm talking about. They've lived this stuff, but they weren't that many. So you actually cannot fix this by genocide without bringing down the ire of the planet eventually. Even CNN, even CNN would eventually have to speak the truth. They can't lie forever. Even they would have to admit something is wrong when people start to get killed en masse. So that's a challenge to them. See, you know, try the truth, CNN. It might set you free. Where did I hear that? Now, sorry, this is the point at which I probably should, as usual, apologize to your listeners, because my wit tends to be sometimes acid-dripping and sarcastic, and some great British personalities have said before that you shouldn't be sarcastic with Americans. They don't like sarcasm, and they carry guns.
Oh, see, we like sarcasm, and we carry guns, so,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. We love you, Harry. That's fine.
And we use sarcasm a lot, because you know what? Honestly, the only people, and you know this, Harry, the people who hate sarcasm are the people who don't get it.
Yeah, I know.
That's really the only reason to hate it, is you just don't get it, which...
It has to be an American that makes that comment, you see. Now,
happy to help.
Otherwise, I will get, you know, hanged, drawn, and quartered.
Oh, yeah. Not here, though.
So the right. So
you see what you want here.
That it's impossible. Therefore, a place has to be found somehow for these people.
Yeah,
where they don't have to have a life in which they're in terror every single day. So, I would like to share with you something that came out of this election that I would call some fundamental truths, four or five of them, and they buried in the details of the election, and they have been truths for a while, and people don't talk about them much. So if you live with me on that for a minute, I would summarize for you those things as follows. The first truth is that Mandela's ANC party has yet again failed to get control of the Western Cape province, which is one of the provinces of South Africa. It is the southwestern one that extends north and east from Cape Town. Yet again, they failed to land that province. Okay, they actually bust black Amakosa people from the east at a furious rate. Those people then try to make the place ungovernable, and they try to destabilize the Democratic Alliance government of that province, and they couldn't pull it off. The ANC was so frustrated at the end of the previous 2014 election that stupid president we had, that polygamist, animist, village idiot, he actually commented that it seems to him ghosts were voting in the West Cape. Anyway, So that was the first truth. They did not get the Western Province. So something's hanging on in the Western Province. What is it and why is it? So the second truth is that the distribution of the vote for this Democratic Alliance, when you look at it across the country, you see how the map lights up. It's intensely Democratic Alliance in the West, and then it slowly peters out as you go east. Interesting thing is that when you map onto that the distribution of the Afrikaans language, which is a Dutch derivative, my mother tongue, you'll find that they map almost exactly. So it is people who speak Afrikaans who are basically resisting most strongly in the far west and slowly crumbling towards the east. But in this very last election, they actually made a little bit of a gain towards the east, which is remarkable. But you see that only when you look at voting districts and not at the actual wards or complete complete provinces. You understand what I'm saying? The gerrymandering is such that when you add the numbers together from different booths, different voting stations or districts, then the information gets lost and the ANC kind of just takes everything.
It's a little bit like our big cities here in the U.S., and you look at it and you say, that's what happened.
You know, you've got the panhandle and all those areas, and much of the north of Florida is blood red, and then you got, Broward County or whatever, and suddenly everything's in...
It's a foreign country.
Where they do special math. On that happy note, let's take a really quick break here before we are too far over our time. And we'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Harry Booyens. We are discussing South Africa, and you can find everything about this program at wethepeopleradio.us. Our guest, Dr. Harry Booyens. We are discussing South Africa. And so for those of you who may not have heard any of our previous shows, there are 9 of them, in some form or fashion, either the entire 2 hours or maybe 1 hour segments, but regardless, there were 9 previous episodes. We've discussed a lot of these things in much greater depth. So if, you know, he's referring to, you know, like maps of where people are and all that, we actually have all that on the web for you. So if you go to wethepeopleradio.us, look at some of the previous shows, those maps and everything are right there on the web for you. So you don't have to take our word for it. You can go do your own research.
Yeah, we started at the beginning on this. And so if you want an education on what's happening in South Africa, and it's a really big deal, and it's getting worse.
It's a huge deal, and it's important that as Americans we really understand, because as Harry has so ably pointed out, it's really what would happen if the U.S. didn't beat the British, if the United States didn't beat the British and become the United States, there are a lot of parallels between us and South Africa, and there are a lot of things we've been told that were just gigantic lies. So anyway, if you're out to do some homework and you would like it all to be pretty concise and with a nice story in the background, you can listen to Harry and look at the web and look at all the things that he has sent us and given us to post, so that you can be smart about this. Yep. So okay, back to the story. Sorry.
So West Africa is
West South Africa. Yeah.
Yeah, West South Africa is actually somewhat fighting back.
They're holding their ground anyway.
They're holding their ground. So where are they going from here, Harry?
Okay. So the matter I'd like to raise is that when you look at South Africa as a whole, it has a population of 57 million. So it is a serious country now in terms of population. But It's going down the tubes at a rapid rate. It used to be the number one gold producer. It's now number eight. Its GDP has been overtaken by Nigeria. There are now other countries in Africa with a higher GDP per capita, like Botswana, etc. They're really moving into President Trump's special African country category now. And the people in the west of the country are looking at all of this, and something happened last week. There were six farm attacks in South Africa, and one of those attacks was now in the Western Cape province, where a farmer was attacked. He was murdered. They found his body in his underclothes at the gate of the farm. The wife was attacked, and they assaulted her with boiling water. So she was bound, and she had boiling water thrown over her head.
Oh.
Always this preoccupation with fire and boiling water. It's like the savage, you know, very impressed with fire. Now, you can imagine how this is going down over there. And at least Katie Hopkins of Britain has picked up on this, and she's on YouTube appealing to the world to please, for heaven's sake, do something. So, but you won't get that from the BBC, and you certainly won't get it from CNN. You know, nothing,
right.
Nothing could distract them from attacking President Trump, which is the prime cause of Western civilization, according to them.
Yeah, now, the cover-up.
it's so visible and transparent, you know. It's an insult to a child.
It's just sad.
So, I wanted to talk to you about just a quick few numbers here about that province. First of all, its total population is 6.6 million. Of that 6.6 million, half of them are people who refer to themselves as colored. About 20%, roughly, would refer to themselves as white. And my comment to you is, I object strenuously to those two categories. If ever there was something in apartheid that I really felt miserable about, it was this distinction that was made between white and colored. It just won't stand. And this present government is continuing that in South Africa, and I find it very difficult to draw a line between white and colored. And for that, I would like to go to some examples, and this is very, very important, because I and a lot of people like me feel that there is only one nation there, and they are all Afrikaners, just like the Dutch and the Swiss and the Germans and the Belgians and the Danes and the Swedes and the Norwegians would call you Amerikaners. That's the word for an American in any of those languages, Amerikaner. Just so these guys are Afrikaners. It means they settled there and their allegiance is to that place. And they've been there for hundreds and hundreds of years. So, to me, the distinction between colored and white is rubbish. The distinction between the black people is real, because that's a completely different culture. They have their own languages. They have their own beliefs. It's a completely different system. One-third, roughly, of the population in that province is black, and all of them live around Cape Town, pretty much all of them, probably 95%, and they're all in these squatter camp arrangements around Cape Town, which tells you they relatively recently arrived there. They were shipped in.
Okay.
There's always been ghettos there, but the ANC of the central government has tried to take that place by shipping people in by the hundreds of thousands.
Sounds familiar.
So, and what's happening is that the so-called colored people feel that the world gets told that they are treated as honorary black, but in fact, they don't get the houses, they don't get the jobs, nobody wants to speak to them in their mother tongue, everything has to be the ANC's Xhosa language, And only the guys shipped in recently get any social benefits. So it is Obama's America on steroids, where only your illegal immigrants get the benefits. Yeah, the locals don't get any.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds very, very familiar.
I was just sitting here nodding my head going, sounds familiar.
Yeah, exactly. And I keep telling people, you know, why don't you go to South Africa to see your future? You can see what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it's going. You know, wake up. Anyway, so as you can imagine, the folks in the Cape are saying so far and no further, and there is now a cry rising that says, okay, we want to secede. We would like to secede formally, openly, and legally in terms of the Constitution of South Africa and with the aid of the world community. That's what's going on.
And do they, what's the, because that's the, it's interesting because the area that we live in, Northern California, the people here, it's not secession, but it's, they would like a different state here so that they're not under the thumb of the California legislature. They would like to have more self-determination. And there, but the process is the problem. I mean, you literally, one of the ways, I mean, this is a whole big topic we won't do, but right now. But one of the ways is that the legislature of California says, oh, okay, great idea. We'll just make a different state, and we agree, and you can go do that. Well, that's never happening. Do you have the same problem in South Africa? Do you need South Africa?
It's going to be, there is a clause in the Constitution that says people have a right to run themselves, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
But in the end, the central government has to vote for that, which, of course, they won't.
Right. Okay, same problem.
Where the international community comes in.
Right.
Now, as far as I know, farmers are not being attacked and tortured to death in Northern California.
Nope. We've managed to not have that.
So I think there's an extreme situation. Also, I think the people in Northern California have broadly the same culture, certainly not the values, but broadly the same culture as those elsewhere in California. Whereas in South Africa, the Western Cape are largely Christian guys of many hundreds of years standing. They have regular Western capitalist values, free market system values. They're largely Judeo-Christian people, whereas the people from the East are black people with their own languages, their own cultures, their own histories. You know, they speak isiXhosa. It's a different situation. This is a real distinction. So what I wanted to do is, with a few minutes that's left, it's to just sketch you the commonality in the West. Why the people in the West are saying they're a nation, they want to be treated as a nation, and they want to split off as a nation, they want to run themselves, and they want this evil ANC out of their faces. They don't want them there. They want nothing to do with them.
Right.
And I can do that best by describing to you who the people in the West Cape are. How did they get there? Who are they?
Okay. I hate to do this to you, because it seems like every 2 seconds we have a break. But let's take our break just slightly early so that we don't break this part up, and then we'll run with that thought to the top of the hour. Our guest is Dr. Harry Billions. We are discussing South Africa, and you are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
We're talking about the breaking away of Western South Africa.
How are they going to do it?
How would they go about that?
Well, they would have to prove how they constitute a nation. They would have to show that they can make a economic go of it. They have to at some point have at least a shadow government, and they would have to have the help that they can get in places like the United Nations and the European Parliament. And when all is said and done, all those people will make a lot of noise. Probably some will resist against it, and in the end the appeal will be to the United States. So these folks are going to be trying in the near future to get as much help as they can from concerned people in the United States to try and save what is left of Western civilization in South Africa.
And how dangerous is that going to be? I mean, anytime you try something like this and fail, the ramifications are usually pretty severe.
No, they're already killing
us. And the point is that some places have done it wrongly, like was it the Catalans in Spain, who just pulled out an illegal election.
Right.
Other people got it right. The Kosovo people got it right. Not to be confused with a war in Kosovo. But they eventually got their independence. The whole world agreed that South Sudan should be a separate country from the rest of Sudan. So there are models that work.
Well, they really have no choice, because obviously appealing to any sort of political change or humanity or... it started out kind of as a, maybe not started out, but it's a private property rights issue, stealing the land from people, but then killing the people and stealing the land. I don't know. I mean, the killing obviously is a bigger problem than the property rights, but tied together.
I had really hoped I could convey to you guys the source of the people that make up that nation in the west of the country, because that is the all-important singular item that has to be proved to the world. Without that, all of this is going nowhere.
Okay.
So what happened is, soon after the Dutch got to the Cape in 1652, they needed labor for the Cape, and what they did is they brought in some of their slaves and their indentured people and so forth from the Far East, particularly from Indonesia. Many of those people were Indian, and, two examples. One of them is my wife's ancestor, another one is my ancestor. I have an ancestor that was Angela of Bengal. My wife had Angela of Bengal. I had Catherine of Bengal, both Indian women. So, yes, I have Indian ancestry. I don't know how somebody determines that I'm white and the next guy over is colored. Just, what, skin color? That doesn't count today.
No.
That's artificial as far as I'm concerned. And those people who want to argue with me would have to be, outed as racists in order to make the distinction. So, today, anybody with a surname Snyman in South Africa is a descendant of Catherine of Bengal, and there are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of white South Africans who are descendants of Catherine of Bengal. I'm one of them.
Wow.
Okay? So, the next thing is that in 1658, the Dutch took a Portuguese ship on the high seas, and it had 100-something slaves. They brought a big fraction of them to the Cape. And on that ship, for example, was Isabella of Angola. Yes, the country Angola, which is the major source of slaves in Brazil. That ship was on the way to Brazil. Well, Isabella of Angola is my ancestor. I have a black slave ancestor. I'm Lily White, and I have a black slave ancestor. Okay? So have many so-called colored people in South Africa, and so have hundreds of thousands of other white guys. Okay? So you're going to have to be a racist to make the distinction. A little bit later, they got from the Portuguese some folks that they got out of Mozambique, or Mozambique, as the Dutch called it, and they just abbreviated that to Mazbikers. So these people were called Mazbikers. I can show you death notices from the 1920s that still refer to people as Mazbikers. These folks all speak Afrikaans like I do. Their culture is mine. It's all the same people. All they have is a skin tone difference. Okay. Again, if somebody wants to tell me that that is the basis of a cultural difference or an ethnic difference, they would have to confess to be a racist.
So if you don't consider the skin color as a reason to secede, what are they going to go to the South African government with as far as a reason to let them go? I mean,
one of the major reasons will be the fact that their mother tongue is Afrikaans, that their religion is mostly Christian, not exclusively so. The point is, in the end, the Dutch also brought in Muslim people from the East. Okay? Now, my point that I want to make to you, just like what some black people were brought to the United States who were Muslim, the way I look at it is, today, those people that I've mentioned to you, whether they were Indonesian Muslims, whether they were West African black people, whether they were Mozambican black people, whether they were European descended, or whether they were, the last category, Mardakers, which were free slaves from the Far East, often of Indian descent. They were free men, and they came to the Cape. Okay? So when you put all those people down at the Cape for 360 years, you get people who basically have one culture and one value system.
Sure.
And today, all of these people are Westerners by any criterion of any significance. They have nothing in common with South Africa's black Bantu people who have a Bantu culture. Nobody in Africa has any doubt what the word Bantu means. Okay? I spoke to a guy from Rwanda on my own staircase here the other day, and he said, "Do you know the word Bantu?"
As a matter of fact, I do.
Of course I do. You know. So the only thing that distinguishes among these people, who all speak the same mother tongue and go to largely the same church, okay, is a degree of skin tone. So my comment is, these people are in fact the only equivalent in South Africa of the black people of the United States. That's why I'm always so careful to tell you to please stop referring to American black people as, you know, African Americans.
Right. Well, it's not even accurate in most of the cases.
Yeah. So, in the end, you know, we got some French Huguenots that came to the Cape, around 200 of them. And just to show you how interesting it got, one of the people who was banished to the Cape was the Raja of Tambora. So he was a Muslim guy who opposed the Dutch. He was banished to the Cape. And in the end, his son married one of the staunch French Protestant Huguenot daughters. He converted to Christianity, and they married. I hope that gives you some feeling for just how polyglottic this mix of people actually is.
Well, I think that you're...
Welcome to the United States.
Yeah, but the closing line of your writing that we posted for today, it said, your final line on this was, today's program explores the future of this 367-year-old Western majority of minorities.
And that's what it is.
And that's exactly what it
is. The West Cape is a majority, and they're a collection of,
of minorities.
They're a minority in the country. They're a majority in the west of the country.
Sure.
And they're staying so far and no further.
Yeah, and they're going to have to figure it out, because you can't, you're right. I forget, is it 5 million or 9 million people?
Nine.
I know they're really different.
the West Cape province, the Western Cape province, which is the southwest.
Yes.
It's about 6.6 million.
Okay.
And then there's a lot more of them in the province to the north of that. That province has a majority of black people, of Bantu people, but they are pretty much all in the far northeastern corner of that province, which is an artificial situation.
Sure. Well, I mean, that's way too many people to... I mean, you can only squeeze them over so far. And
yes.
same too with the, you know, the farming and all the things that...
The reality is that the black Bantu people have been pushing the indigenous Khoi people, who are the last ingredient of this mix. They pushed them all the way south until we were in the Southwest Cape, and they're the next element of this polyglot mix. And you can't pull them out of the mix anymore. And
right.
Yes, I have a Khoi ancestor as well. In fact, the first one to convert to Christianity at the Cape. She was the interpreter for the first commander at the Cape in 1657. So I am, you know, by skin tone, I'm white. By composition, I have the same ancestors as the so-called colored people.
Sure.
My name.
Right.
You know. And
see,
it's just not
a cut and dried issue, which is why we have 10 episodes with you. We're sorry we have to run away, but we will chat again soon. Thank you, Dr. Harry Billions. We really appreciate all your information. You've been listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. You're listening to KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.